is our C7 president. I am the president-elect. We need a president for 2017. So if you feel like volunteering or want to nominate somebody, somebody you like or other, join us next door after this talk. We need a 2017 president. Okay, so SDS resistance. Yes, why am I late? I'm late because I was arguing about with a patent attorney and a patent officer in the university about money. SDS resistance is very near and dear to my heart. I went to Southern Illinois in 1991, 24 years ago, to study nitrogen assimilation. But as soon as I got there, they went, "Hey, David, we've got a problem. It's new, it's in our backyard, and we need you to fix it." And this is the list of my collaborators. I'm putting them up front because I have to recognize the people who contribute massively to this now 24-year effort. Currently, we have Yi Chen Li in the audience, and possibly Dr. Cantazzi. I don't see her, but she's here somewhere. Working on figuring out a solution to a new disease that cropped up in our backyard about 25 years ago. So, people's data I'm going to use will include Henry Nagayan, who's doing great work on the genome. Khalid Maxam, ex-postdoc, but now long-time colleague, and Chris Town from JCVI, should call them out, Sylvia Ciancio and Alex Lukow, but there are many. Now, sudden death syndrome, what does that tell you? It's not a disease, it's a syndrome. There's lots of stuff going on. We have a sort of photorespiratory bleach going on the leaf, which we know now, thanks to Madame Bhattacharya's work, has got something to do with carbonic anhydrase and rubisco and all the things that it looks like it's doing. It's scorching the leaf because photosynthesis, or more accurately, photorespiration, is knocked off. Discombobulated, whatever. We're not quite sure what to call it yet. On the other end of the plant, where the pathogen is, we've got the root rot going on, and the root rot doesn't necessarily correlate with the leaf scorch. So sometimes you can have fairly good resistance to root rot and terrible resistance to leaf scorch. It's kind of like you make the pathogen mad. It can't get at the roots, so it kills the leaf instead. And it does that without ever leaving the root zone. It just sits in the root zone and does its business from there. Fusaria are promiscuous. They don't care what plant they're on, so they'll take out anything you can think of. Here we've got it going on Arabidopsis, the same Fusaria virguliformi. And we've never found a plant yet that resists it. The nearest we can come is Phaseolus coccineus. That's the huge red runner bean. And it doesn't really resist it. It just puts a massive amount of resources into the root and thrusts it through the zone where Fusarium virguliformi is. So it's more of an avoidance and investment thing. This is the beast itself. It doesn't look very different from other Fusaria. It sort of oppresses itself to the media. When you annoy it, it turns purple or pink. You can annoy it by making it grow on a restrictive media like cornmeal and silica. We have variations in the level of aggressiveness of the pathogen, and it's in competition with hundreds of other Fusaria in the soil, so sometimes you'll plant into a historically known infested environment and you'll see SDS in the mid-season, you go, yippee, and then by the end of the season it disappears. It gets replaced by another Fusaria, which we'll call Fusaria B, to be in historical reference to Rupen Roy's work. It is a massive problem, though. It started from nothing. Blue spot disease, a few growers in like 1987, through to the number two disease, ahead of Phytophthora, across the north central region now. It doesn't compete with soybean cyst nematode. in terms of the losses stake, but it does compete with Soviet assist nematode in the environment. It rides on the nematode. The nematode helps it get into the plant. Then equally, we can isolate it from the eggs of the soybean cyst nematode itself, so it's eating the nematode as well. It really doesn't care what it's growing on. Over the 20-some years I've been working on this thing, we've done wonderful work on soybean cyst nematode resistance losses. We've managed to reduce them by half by marker-assisted selection. As I'll tell you in a minute, some of the loci for resistance to sudden death syndrome are the same as the loci for resistance to sudden death syndrome. And in the same period, the losses to, apart from this little blip here in a wet year, the losses to SDS have doubled. So we've halved the losses to SCN and doubled the losses to SDS whilst co-selecting. You know, select for SCN resistance, you get about 40-50% of the resistance to SDS. So we've been doing something terribly wrong. We've been really messing up. it started down here in the 80s, and my old mate XB Yang and Dr. Sherm made an analysis predicting where it was going to be bad in the 1990s, 1996 in fact, and they said, well, you know, looking at the pathogen and what it does and how it grows and what temperature it likes and the moisture levels, it's going to be terrible in the north central. It may have started in southern Illinois, but it's going to go into the prairies. I should tell you, southern Illinois is a silt loam clay soil. We're not on the prairie. We can drive about 100 miles north to get up on the prairie. We're on the old Midwest Basin soil, which used to be basically a sea bottom. It's got no structure, it's got no organic matter. It's a terrible place to grow soybeans. Up here is a really, really efficient and effective place to grow soybeans, and that's where SDS looks like it should go, and it is in fact what it has done. Where did it come from? Well, it could have been a species hop from Phaseolus vulgaris. There's a very, very closely related pathogen that really does the number on common bean, and we do grow, we're called Little Egypt down here, we still do grow quite a few millions of acres of green beans down here. Or it could have been on dust from South America, either blowing in or coming in from the equipment that we transfer back and forth every season. So we don't really know where it comes from. What we can say is that down there in South America, they have three types of SDS, Virguliformis, Tucumanis, and Brasiliensis, and we only have Virguliformis, so maybe the species hop is more likely, we don't know. The wonderful thing I particularly enjoy about SDS research is you've got no way to predict when it's going to show up. This is just 4 years of the same state of Illinois and the places where we got it. We have to plant four locations to get one, on average, with discoverable disease. It's annoying. It can show up and disappear. It can not show up, and then it can just show up season long. Never mind. That's my problem. So historical data is exceptionally valuable. Using exceptionally valuable data, we've managed to screen a number of populations for the QTL that underlie SDS resistance, and if you're a lumper like I am, and things are sort of in the same general 20 centimorgan area, you can cut it down to about 18 loci, maybe 19, as I'll go on and say later, if you become a splitter. If you're a splitter, this becomes 36 loci, because there's probably two at each of these locations. Everywhere there's a black thing, somebody in some population has declared an SDS resistance loci. I think this does, yes, it includes some of the GWAS data. By 2002, our lead population with wonderfully accurate phenotype data that will never be reproduced, it was massively expensive to get because it's multiple locations, and then the data is adjusted to the R6.5 maturity date. And that's the only way to be accurate with this kind of field data, unfortunately. Nobody's prepared to do that anymore. Shout out to Victor and GT and Paul Gibson for doing that. We had a stack of 6 QTL in the resistance over here, and just an ordinary QTL. If you pick any ordinary cultivar, it'll have 2 resistance QTL over here. And you can see the difference in color of green there. And that translates into yield. Now, we're messing around with a stack of 10. The 10 stacks are fabulous when they perform compared to the 2 stack. The 6 stack is stable and penetrant, at least for most of its loci. These 4 in particular are excellent. That one's not too bad. When selecting for resistance, it's quite good. When selecting against susceptibles, it's not very good. And that gives us an indication of the effectiveness of the marker. You have to select on the resistant allele. You can't really select against the susceptible allele. And that shows up in this tabulated data where you can see yields. So back to the problem. Why are we messing up? We're doing great with marker-assisted selection on SCN and terrible on marker-assisted selection with SDS. And yet the 2 resistances are phenomenologically linked. If you select for SCN resistance, you should be getting 50% of the SDS resistance, but you're not. So let's think about SCN for a little bit. SCN is a worm that infests the root system and produces these little lemony yellow cysts on the root. The resistance, the major resistance for SCN, is over here on linkage group G, chromosome 18. It's called RHG1. You need this gene every time. You can't have SCN resistance without it. And fortunately, it brings along a lot of SDS resistance with it. We used to think there were 3 SDS resistance QTL, very closely linked to the SCN resistance QTL. We now are drifting towards the thought there might be 4. Over on linkage group A2, which you sometimes need to go along with G, in at least the Peking source, there's nothing going on with SDS. It's neutral. But on D, or 17, as it's now known, this is 8, 17, you have the opposite. If you get SCN resistance, it's terrible for SDS resistance. You go in the wrong direction. So it's a coupled linkage over here and a discoupled linkage over there. And there's the little blighter, the nematode itself, attacking a resistant root, not getting very far. This is peaking the source in our lines. Resistance source in our lines, and this is a susceptible Kent, where it swells up, fills itself full of eggs, and infests the soil. Once you've got SCN in the soil, it never goes away. It's 15 years plus of not planting soybean to even attempt to get rid of it. It's also promiscuous. It goes to 124 different species. It really doesn't care, just like SDS does. So they're a problem. The syndrome, sudden death syndrome. It's a root disease and a leaf disease, and the 2 things don't correlate very well. Root and leaf disease differ, and the R value is 0.35. So you got to study both. Back to this slide, there's the root, there's the funny looking leaf. You see, really, you got to study both. Okay. So it's, So this is what we're studying, disease resistance. Sudden death syndrome didn't come along from nowhere. We have a great greenhouse assay. We can mix cultivars, resistance and susceptibles. Don't cross over. There's no root exudate. We have all of these loci now. We've made multiple crosses, and we've tried to do proper breeding to get to the end of the problem. Stack of 10, we thought. Turns out we get some that are more resistant than the best resistants ever. These are the parents. These are the most resistant parents ever, and we've crossed them, and we've got some that are better. And we've got it better by whichever we look at, the leaf, the root, whatever. As a breeder, I'm interested in how many populations of things effective in, and some of the markers are great, and some of the markers are terrible. In populations, in different populations. This is the number of populations in which a marker is predictive. So we have a feeling now for which ones out of the 10 of the 18 that we've studied are the best. Okay, that was penetrance, and this is the populations. So these are the ones that are good in population. We really love the C2, we really love the F. The G ones, these three of the Gs all go together, and we're very happy with those. We're about to publish on the field data. All that previous data was from greenhouses. Now, Yichen Li and Stella Cantazzi are here and there. We are studying these NILs. The NILs on this end were all done in 2005. The NILs for that one and that one, that's actually not a good slide, are now being studied with SNP markers. These are the SNP markers, and here's the thing. Peak of p-value here, a dip there, another peak there. That means we're probably going to split that QTL into two. This QTL is a single QTL. So I've previously been saying there were three on G, now I'm going to say there's four on G. So the conclusions are, SDS is a disease emerging in tandem with global warming and higher yields, and it's tramping north. It's got all the way into Canada. It's gone as far as it can go. It will get replaced by something else, we think, because we're starting to see it being pushed out of our niche. It's getting rarer and rarer for us to get good data. Multiple loci alter the SDS and SCN resistance. They're linked often. But they are not the same, they're not pleiotropic. There's one pleiotropic, one on G, everything else is linkage. Whoops. The allele stacks that we've been able to move, create, can improve resistances, so we can push resistance forward. We're having to battle as breeders with epistasis amongst loci, redundancy amongst loci. You don't need all of the stack of 10. Some of them are better than others. We've probably got some overdominance, and pleiotropy are all being found. The genotype by environment effects are massive. We have to chase this disease all over the state. We have to plant four locations to get one good one, and that's in a good year. Some years we get nothing. For the leaf disease, for the root disease, we used to say, oh yeah, we'll get root disease every year. All we have to do is dig them up and plate them out. Not true anymore. The last 2 years, we've had a different fusarium moving in and taking the niche of SDS. We've seen it in early season. We know it's there because we put it there, but then it gets pushed out. So, SDS is an interesting shifting target, and it's going to keep the breeders and the breeding technologists in business for a very long time yet to come. Thank you. Any questions?
That's a good question. So I guess the question is, if I can repeat it, is if you make a stack of six, what percent of variation can you explain? So we can get about 80% of heritability from the stack of six, and that will take disease incidence down from 60% to about 5%. Severity will go down from early defoliation, the actual sudden death part of the syndrome, which is a 7 to 8, down to a 1 or 2, where you just see a little bit of leaf scorch and not too much damage to the plant. Plants producing more leaves than they actually need. to survive. So the stack of six is exceptionally effective. The problem with the stack of six is no breeder wants to select on six things at once. The population size has to be massive to cut it in half six times. Most of the time, the breeder wants just two markers. So we're trying to deliver them the two best markers they can use for SDS, if that's their target. The problem is SCN is always the first target because it's a massive loss maker. So we're struggling with being number two.
All right, I think we'll thank David one last time.